Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to another special edition of the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show, Gold Cup USA Guyana postgame show. Pardon me. United States. Excuse me for a second. You would definitely have to say probably a better second half in this one. Defeating Guyana by a final of 4-0. And all you can say is that I think this is a performance that it was solid enough where they looked better in the second half. They looked more cohesive in the second half. And I just believe that right now what you've seen from them is a match where it was very important for them to be off on the front foot. They needed goals. They got 4 tonight. They found ways in the second half to get the opportunity to score. They did. One was a lucky off the noggin that wasn't even known about, which is fine, as I call it a doink. But other than that, I just think at the moment this is a solid opening performance. Could have been better. But other than that, it's a solid performance. Joining me right now, the coach, Chris Gluck, joining me for post-match tonight. And, Chris, you know, I saw what you tweeted. They have to have 70% possession, scoring 4 goals. I haven't seen the final stats yet. But with some of the things, if you've watched, overall, with the with the 4 goals being scored, and I am looking for the possession, 59.9% for the U.S. and 40.1% for Guyana altogether. Is this, in your mind, at least a solid performance from the U.S., even though the truth is it's a tale of 2 halves?
You know, Daniel, I think it's a good question, and for now, I'd say, okay, yeah, it was a solid performance. Look, mm-hmm. I want the U.S. men's national team to win. I want them to win at the very highest level of football. And mm-hmm. the performance tonight was winning against the team that they could basically dominate athletically, and I think most people know that it's not just the athletic skill, it's the technical skill, and it's the mental skill that gets you at the very highest level against Germany or England or Spain or Portugal or any number of other teams. So, but against Guyana, yes, it was a good result.
I agree. I think that was a good result. I mean, you know, I felt their opening 45 was a decent opening. I thought, you know, you saw some stretches that they allowed Guyana to be competitive in this match where, okay, you know, we also have to look at some of the players that are just joining this national team. Are probably getting their first competitive match in, you know, CONCACAF Gold Cup action. You know, obviously they've said very much, you know, in pregame, before the game got started, they've talked about how, number one, this is the first competitive match in over 600 days. To me, that's like a year and a half. No World Cup last year in Russia. Bunch of friendlies all over the place. This is Berhalter's fifth match altogether. In my mind, maybe – I don't know if there's any jitters, but I would say maybe some of the chemistry wasn't there to start the opening 45. But when you have those veterans like Michael Bradley, and I know we've blamed him for everything, and he still deserves all the criticism in the world, which is true. But when you finally see people like Michael Bradley being on the pitch, seeing people like Christian Pulisic on the pitch, to me, you're seeing some of the veterans and some of the, shall we say, young players who are now becoming veterans, they're finally showing why they are going to be a part of this national team. One, Pulisic will be here for a long time. Bradley climbing towards the end of his national team career.
Yeah, you know, my first instincts after watching the first half was that the majority of the team was very athletic except for Bradley.
Right.
And even in the second half, I mean, he's supposed to be playing at number six, which means he's supposed to be marshaling, I think, on how I view it, he's supposed to be marshaling the penetration into the attacking final third through the midfield. And rarely, only once in the second half, but rarely did I see him marshal the penetrating passes. You know, there was an interesting article on MLS, and it had a lot to do talking about seeing Zimmerman or Long do a lot of the marshalling, or ream. And for the overwhelming majority of the game, those three center backs, if you will, did that. And I think that's okay against Guyana. But, okay, you play your opponent on the day, granted. But, you know, getting back to, do we want to win at the very highest level? I'm not sure that, you know, that's what right looks like. I'm going to give you an acronym, but it's not. It's IMPECT, IMPECT. And if you Google that, it talks about packing different sides of the pitch and outplaying the opponents in streams of three or four or five or six passes that result on a shot on goal. Now, there's this was a statistical analytical tool first created, I think, in Germany. And teams in Major League Soccer, teams in Germany, teams in England have taken that statistical tool and they've applied it as a tactical tool in the game of soccer. And what we're seeing with the U.S. men's national team is impact, at least against Guyana. They're looking to get those three or four connecting passes to get that shot on goal and the goal scored. And they're quick. And I think if we do a replay on three of the four goals, we see that sort of tactical approach occur. The only one I think that it didn't occur on was the deflected header off of Zardes. But the resulting shot from Areola, across from Areola, did generate the end result. But the tricky thing is that if you look at a team like Man City, who uses impact, you look at Liverpool, you look at Tottenham, all these top teams apply impact, but they don't apply it as a standard way and mean to actually possess through control and penetrate and create shots on goal. So there's the balance of, okay, the U.S. men's national team is showing very well against weaker opponents in implementing what I think they're using called impact. Now, I know professional teams in Major League Soccer use this. As a matter of fact, that's what Giovanni Savarese has instituted in Portland. But I'll leave it at that. And I've got some other thoughts here, Daniel, but I'll turn it back to you.
Well, I mean, you know, look, I mean, I agree with what you're saying. You know, right now, the tactics that you have for your opponent on the day is Guyana. Guyana right now, as we've said, for those of you that don't look at the FIFA World Rankings, they are currently ranked at 177. And to me, if you're ranked, you know, either to the bottom third or very close to the complete bottom of the FIFA rankings, then you should be destroyed at least 10 goals to nil in the men's game. But, you know, they got four on Guyana tonight. And all I can say, Chris, is that while the opening 45 was not great, the second 45 was. And I think you saw a better side coming after Guyana going in there tonight.
Yeah, I think so, Daniel. Let me change the direction of the conversation a little bit. So, okay, we're pretty positive on our result. But, okay, looking ahead to Panama. Now, if their scouts are scouts that are worthy scouts, they would have realized that the U.S. men's national team was very predictable in their penetration. I mean, I would
and there's no doubt about that.
Yep, 75 to 80% of the balls were coming from the back. So that's easier to predict, if you will. The other thing that was easier to predict from the Panama perspective was the overwhelming strength of penetration came down the left side. Not the right side, the left side. So already you're allowing Panama to start to create traps, etc. The other thing is there weren't a lot of deep triangles on the corners. Now, we talked about that with Cardick, I think two games
mm-hmm.
ago. So that's not changed either. The lead striker, well, I won't call him a striker, the lead forward for the U.S. men's national team was Giassi Zardes. I think he actually had a horrible first touch for most of the night.
Except for the one that went off his head.
Yeah, well, and that was a deflection. So
I know.
I mean, you could call it a first touch, but it was a first touch goal. But a deflection, I guess. But so that's predictable. So you don't need two center backs to try to marshal Zardes. You could probably get away with one. Let's see. Boyd is a finisher.
He was
on the right. Yeah. I mean,
mm-hmm.
There's strikers and then there's finishers. And since he's not playing as a forward, I won't call him a striker. I'll just call him a finisher. The nice thing is, and this is what I pointed out to Cardick in a tweet prior to the game, was the key to the success in playing against a team that's bunkering is not layering the ball two layers like the men's national team did tonight. It's actually switching the point of attack from the left to the right. And we saw Boyd got two goals tonight, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And both of those, if memory serves, the penetration for both of those started from the left-hand side. So there's a lot to be said if you're going to be playing, you need to switch, especially if Panama bunker. So that's a good thing. And that gives you more of a balance, I guess. I've not seen Weston McKennie finish. Maybe you have, Daniel. I don't really know what his talent is when it comes to finishing. But we know Pulisic can finish.
Absolutely.
So there's things for Panama to consider that are probably going to be easier to read with respect to the men's national team.
Well, I will say this for Boyd. I mean, I think he found those areas very well. I'll even admit that I thought when Michael Bradley crossed the ball to him to the far side of the pitch, I thought he just missed him. I thought maybe the pass was just mistimed a little. Maybe there was a hint of offside, but the assistant did not raise his flag. I mean, Boyd, you know, took that ball well, and then he just ripped it right through the defense, used the defender as a screen, and Clark had no chance on that. The second goal that he got on a great pass from Areola, put him in a great position to make that second goal happen. And I think right now there's another piece of the puzzle that I think the U.S. has definitely found that can help them down the road. Now, obviously, the next match will be against Trinidad and Tobago this coming Saturday night over in Cleveland. But still, though, I believe at this point in time, what we have seen from Boyd, I think he's a solid player. I think he's done well. I truly believe that he can definitely find ways of penetrating the defense of the opponents if he's put in the right position. Just to go back on your Jossie Zardes opinions, which I do agree with you, his first touch is horrible. How many opportunities he had in the first half, and he still couldn't find a way to turn around and put the ball in the back of the net? I mean, you have Christian Pulisic maybe 3-4 yards away from you. He leaps up for the ball, heads it down. He puts it right on your feet, and you just can't make that turnaround, and you just cannot find a way to turn around and put a boot on the ball, especially when you're at point-blank range. I have to say it. I just have to say it. His first touch is horrible. You know, maybe there are some players that have excellent first touches in the club game, but when it comes to the national team game, when you got to face these teams that are either, you know, superior than you or, you know, below you, you still have to find a way to turn around and put the ball in the back of the net with ease. To me, Zardes, a good finisher as he is, I'm not going to call him a striker either. I think he's a finisher, but he also has a problem with that. I think on the international stage, he's having mental issues trying to make that quick turnaround so he can put the ball in the back of the net, and is just not fast enough to make those decisions happen.
Yeah, here's how I would kind of say it, and I agree 100%. And this is something I will point out to lads that I would be coaching. As I said, the difference between a forward and a striker is the striker has the capability to make space for themselves and put the shot on goal and score. The forward doesn't have the capability to make space for themselves when they have the ball. They're a connector. And even tonight, Zardes was slow in his connecting. I mean, like when he got that ball, I think in the first half, and it was back to goal, and he had a defender off his left shoulder. You're either going to turn it quickly to your right and strike it with your left peg, or you just drop it back. And I think he took one or two touches before he dropped it back to, was it Lima or was it Pulisic? I can't remember. But I think it was Lima, and he put a left peg to the ball, and it just went wide of goal. But, you know, that has to be quicker, and it's not. And, you know, as much as I've kind of poo-pooed Altidore, I think Josie would have made, and executed a quicker decision there.
I agree.
Than Zardes did.
I agree. No, I definitely agree with you there. Yeah, because I think what Josie would have done was Josie would have at least held the ball up on the center back just to try and give him some space, and then he would have made the move to make the shot, and he definitely would have scored there.
Yeah. Well,
because that's the thing. Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say I'm not 100% sure that Altidore would have scored there, but I think he would have tried to make an attempt at a strike on goal. And Zardes wasn't even in the right position, even after a touch, to do that. And it's like, you know, a striker knows they have very little time. And if they're not going to hang on to the ball, turn it, strike it, you got to drop it. And then hold on to the defender as well. I mean, that's what the left arm's for. You tuck it around their back and you hold on to them. And then you turn.
Yeah, I agree.
But all told, I mean,
I
think Zimmerman looked pretty comfortable moving the ball from the back. I think he was probably Berhalter's first choice. But Long did well, as did Ream. And I like the idea of the fullback moving up and tucking in and then playing out wide. I like that. But that usually works better if you have a six that's more engaged in marshaling the penetration. And if I recall, Bradley got that ball and sent it to Boyd on the switch after there was a turnover in the middle of the pitch. So there wasn't a play from the back to Bradley. It was a loose ball that Bradley picked up, I think. Maybe your memory's better on that than mine, Daniel.
Probably, but you know, I'll go with your assessment any day. Moving on forward here, I want to talk about Paul Ariola, if you don't mind. Now, I know you have always asked this question: why is he on the national team? What is his purpose of being on the national team? You know, you don't see any technical ability out of him. You don't see, him doing much, you know, with the ball. I will say this, though, and I have to give Paul Ariola credit for this. It's not so much about him having technical ability. I think for him, it's about being a blue-collared worker, if you understand where I'm coming from. From what we have seen from Paul Ariola, when his head is always screwed on right. He's attacking down the flanks. He's attacking down the sides. He's trying to make something happen. He's trying to get himself into, you know, not so much just bringing the ball up, not so much just passing the ball like he did on the second goal for Boyd to make it 4-0. He's trying to get into those prime areas inside the 18 to bury those chances and to put the USA ahead, or at least get his own goal to add on to the scoreline. I think what Paul Ariola does, sometimes Hart may be a little less in this game, but if he can put himself, and even he said this himself as well, if he puts himself into these better positions to have better scoring chances or to set up others for scoring chances, I truly believe that Paul Ariola can fit on this national team if he shows more, I wouldn't say more heart, but just to keep going with how he's going, not just what he does with DC United, but what he does for the national team.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the word I would use, Daniel, is grinder.
Mm.
He's a grinder. He's working hard, and he's not afraid to get on the defensive side of the pitch. And as a midfielder, you can't be afraid to play on the defensive side of the pitch. And tonight's game pointed out exactly why Paul Arriola started. He had great movement on and off the ball, and his athletic skills were dominant on that left-hand side. And it's great to hear that he wants to work harder, because that tells me that he wants to learn to get better. The tough part, I think, comes when Paul goes up against more talented right backs and right midfielders who aren't quite dominated by his athletic skill. Even in the Championship League in England or Bundesliga One, the technical skill and the athletic skill of those guys is extremely high, plus the mentality. So the weaknesses of the right back or the right midfielder aren't going to be as pronounced. And so that grinder kind of attitude, well, that can be good if you want to win the ball. But if you want to continue to possess the ball, you still have to have the technical skill. So, hopefully with him playing with Wayne Rooney, things are beginning to rub off on Arriola. Like, for example, when that pass came from, I can't remember who made the pass. Was it McKinney who made the through ball?
Uh-huh.
And it was McKinney, right?
Yep, it was him.
And Arriola, he didn't time his touch to make it a perfect touch. He just had a good touch, and he mm-hmm. didn't lose control of the ball. He kept control of the ball, even though he didn't try to specifically manipulate it in a first touch. I hope that's kind of clear. But then the second shot, the second touch, you saw how he opened up his hips. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he
mm-hmm.
played the ball to the far post. That took technical skill. And that's better from Paul Arriola now, this year, this game, than what I've seen 2 years ago. So I think he's lifted his game, and I hope it continues, and we see some more deft touching. And there was good interplay on the left-hand side of the pitch, working from the middle mm-hmm. third to the attacking third on the left with Arriola.
Yes.
We didn't have that on the right at all. And maybe that's
because Lima's – And I think that's
Lima's,
a big problem.
Yeah. And maybe that's because they pushed Lima up and they played more direct. But if Berhalter wants things to work well, I think he needs to have the balance on the right like he did on the left. And maybe Boyd and Lima haven't played enough together. I don't know. I don't think Boyd's only played two games, right?
This is his second game, actually. The first one was against Venezuela in the 3-0 loss.
Yeah, I thought that was a yeoman's performance. I was kind of disappointed we didn't see Holmes today.
I think he got an injury of some sort. So that's
okay.
Why. I'm sad we couldn't get Tyler Adams out there. And let me just say this right now. I understand why Berhalter is using Nick Lima as some sort of a hustling right back, trying to not only be involved in the attack, but like a hybrid right back, be involved in the attack, but then having that full run back to play defense to help the back line, I think that's wrong. I just don't think, you know, okay, this will work against Guyana, but when you're playing against teams like Trinidad and Tobago, who are, while they're still not strong enough offensively, but, you know, that's a bunch of hardworking players that will find a way to stop you defensively. They could sniff that out. They'll sniff that out pretty good. Panama's on another level, and I agree with you. I think Panama, in the final group stage match against Panama, I think you're going to have to abandon Nick Lima. I'm not saying you have to get rid of Nick Lima. What I'm saying is you have Nick Lima as a traditional right fullback. Having him going up and down the pitch as a hybrid right fullback, to me, that signals very, very dangerous play from Greg Berhalter. I really think – I know he's trying to do. He's trying to maximize what he's been able to do with the Columbus Crew. But when you become the head coach of a national team, of your country's team, whether it's male or female, that's thrown out the window. You cannot mess around having that hybrid right fullback. And what happens is if he gets sidelined, what happens if he gets taken out trying to cut back to play defense, and you have a midfield where they're able to shield him away from his defensive duties and they keep him up the pitch. That's what worries me right now about this whole hybrid right fullback situation. That's what bothers me when you're asking Tyler Adams, who is a traditional six. He is a box-to-box midfielder. He plays solid defensively. He has great attacking prowess. He's got a very good shot. He can do anything and everything as a six, and he's not only a winner when he takes the ball away from the opposition, but his run-back defense, his run-help defense is phenomenal, and he gives relief to the back line so that they can set it up. That's why, yeah, I'm getting worried, where you're having him as a wide player from the back line to go forward and come back. To me, that's a mistake, that you cannot put Tyler Adams out of position to try and satisfy your tactics when this is a different kettle of fish. You're not facing clubs, you know, every single week that you know, or clubs that, you know, you've probably faced once in a while because they've been relegated, and you get new clubs that come in and gets promoted. This is a situation where I think Greg Berhalter needs to not do this hybrid fullback role on the right side. Now, maybe, Chris, and I'd like your thoughts on this, most of the crosses came, or most of the action came from the left side. Is, yeah, the right side trying to be a false two, or what's the right fullback position? A two or a five?
Oh, well.
Because I know three and a four is a center back, I would have to assume.
Yeah. You know.
Let's just call the false two just for argument's sake. Let's just say,
yeah,
for the hell of it, you're using Tyler Adams as a false two. Meanwhile, your three center backs, or your two center backs with a left fullback, or your third center back acting as a fullback, is going to bring up the ball, and he's going to try and make plays by linking up with the midfield, or you'll use your left wing back to bring up the ball while your three center backs are playing defense. And that means he'll have more action, more passes, and maybe your six in Michael Bradley will find a way to cross balls in, push the ball up. I still hate it. We'll get to Michael in a moment, but, you know, to me, if he's going to be a part of helping out the defense, then, you know, right now he's perfect in where he's positioned, Michael Bradley. We'll get back to him in a minute, but that's what I'm thinking of right now, Chris. I think they're using a false two as your right fullback, and then you're using the left side to be more of the action.
I think he did that for this game based upon the opponent. I mean, the only guy I think that showed real class, actually I thought he showed the most class of technical skill of any player on the pitch was Harriet. Great touches on the ball. I just think he kept the ball too long because there's not enough other quality with Guyana that he could have worked, you know, twosomes or threesomes or wall passes. But I don't know if Berhalter plays three center backs against TNT. I think this was one of those unique tactical decisions where, okay, I'm going to try to play one way on one side, and I'm going to try to play one way on the other and see what happens. And it could have had a lot to do with the opponent's technical skills, speed, pace, et cetera. So, I mean, coaches are going to do that. Now, if Reams starts again, my assumption is going to be that they're going to play with the three center backs and they're going to play Lima. They're going to try to overlap him, which they did. And I think he put in some crosses in the first half, but not they weren't. I would call his service was inaccurate. We'll just put it that way. But we're used to that. Yedlin's service was kind of inaccurate. I've not seen Tyler Adams play enough to know if he can play the pure fullback role in a traditional 4-4-2 or 4-3-3. Daniel, you're going to know that better than me. But, you know, Lima, I think, is that guy that tries to fill and occupy and create space on the right for an over-the-top ball. You know, Zimmerman played two layers from the right an awful lot.
Right.
So that, I think, was the tactics behind Lima being where Lima was. I don't think the U.S. has a traditional fullback in their inventory unless Adams can play that role. And I don't know if that diminishes in limits Adams' value added to the pitch or not, because I've not seen him play enough to know. I do feel pretty confident that Bradley's not good enough. I thought he was slow. I thought his touches were poor. And that's not changed really since the Brazil World Cup. But I guess that's the best that the U.S. has to offer, is as long as their scouts look for what they're looking for. Did any of that make sense about Lima? And maybe you can fill in the blanks.
No, it does. No, that makes perfect sense, because look, I think Chris Lima is the future as a right fullback. Like I said, I think he's more of a traditional right fullback, and you know, he's very active. I liked the one play I liked from him actually was the I believe it was in the first half. I think it was in the first half, where he hounded the defender and he forced him to pass the ball back towards his end line. Pardon me. And then all of a sudden, you know, with him starting to annoy the back line of Guyana, they eventually coughed up the ball. And then it went to a teammate who passed it back to Lima, and he had a terrific shot on goal, saved by Clark, but still, though, he started it with a very active, you know, press to force Guyana to play the ball back to their end line and possibly force a turnover, which it did happen. But unfortunately for him, the shot on goal that he got was saved by the keeper, by Clark. So I definitely understand where you're coming from. I think that's what Lima is more prepared for and set up for, not this hybrid of a fullback, which I think it's just a waste of his talents. That's how I feel. I think him doing this hybrid of a fullback, or as I call it right now, and I'm only calling it myself what it is, because I mean, you know, I'm calling it a false two right now, because you know you don't know what you're going to get from him from this situation, and but right now he seems to be adapting very well, so you know.
Yeah, I think I'd call that a winner.
I call it a winner as well. That's fine.
Because they were playing three at the back, basically. I mean, rotating to three at the back when they were in attack. And traditionally, when you play the 5-3-2, it becomes a 3-5-2. And the five that becomes the three, the two on the wide ends, are traditionally called wingers. What's interesting, and you know, you were twice there, I think Lima came in atop the 18-yard box to put a shot on goal. Or maybe it was certainly once, but maybe twice. Now, you know, in the old days, when I lived in England, a team that was very good at doing that was the Arsenal. Arsene Wenger was the head coach. And Lee Dixon,
of course,
I won't say he patentized it, but Lee Dixon was good coming from the left side and then tucking in atop the 18 and taking a shot on goal. So it's not a non-traditional type of role for a fullback to take, but it will be something to look for, and then we can talk about it again after the TNT match, is, okay, were the tactics the same? Did Berhalter make any adjustments based upon the opponent? I mean, head coaches are going to do that. They don't usually do it with player changes. I mean, when you pick your starters, usually you're doing it because you think they're the most mentally switched on for the tactics that you got to play on the day. And usually a player that's good in one type of tactic at the very highest level is kind of good at other tactics too. And then that gives the head coach flexibility. Now that's one thing we didn't see with Berhalter, I don't think, is we didn't see tactics change mid-game. Even when the game was 0-0, we didn't see tactics change. We didn't see tactics change when the game went 1-0. We didn't see them change when they went 2-0. The only time I saw tactics change was when it was 4-0 and it was 88 minutes. And then the U.S. just passed the ball around the back.
I agree with you there. I think, once again, I think Greg Berhalter likes to prove his tactics are the best, and sometimes I just think that's kind of playing too close to the vest, and the next thing you know, you're getting snuffed out. It's just like a Major League Baseball pitcher. When you're tipping your pitches, the other side's going to know about it, and they're going to bomb it out of the ballpark. So,
yeah,
I definitely agree with you. I think he's going to have to find a way to not put a round peg into a square hole.
Yeah. I mean, okay, so I want to go back to the word competitive. I heard Stu Holden say it.
Yes.
And I heard you say it as well. Okay, friendlies are not competitive. But they are. Friendlies are competitive, and here's why. Because they have a specific role in rankings. So even though it's a friendly, and even though people say that they're non-competitive, they are. The results actually matter in a friendly. So if in this, you know, obviously they won. But it hurt their rankings when they dropped it against Venezuela and, oh, gosh, the other team. Memory serves not very well tonight. But the where I wanted to take this to was at the end of the day, it's 2-0, and I'm a head coach, and I'm winning the game. Now's the time for me to stress with the players, I want you to play a different type of game. I want the same players out there, but I want a different type of game. I want you to build from the back and play through the middle. Because it's a competitive game, it actually stresses the players to make them think differently. Because in a really competitive game in the World Cup, they're going to have to do that in order to win at the very highest level. So I poo-poo Berhalter for not changing tactics after the U.S. was up 2-0. It was a wasted opportunity. And I heard Landon Donovan. Yep. Now, 1 minute after the game, say, well, you know, Berhalter's trying to play controlled possession from the back, or words to that effect. But he had to do what he had to do with the players that he had to win this game. But for me, that's only good enough for the first, you know, 55 or 65 minutes. After it's 2-0, change those tactics. Pressurize the players. Make them think and make different decisions, because they're going to have to at the highest level.
No, I agree. I just think that you can only keep your tactics going for so long that it's going to get snuffed out against better opponents. And if it's not, you know, the upper echelons of this confederation, obviously Mexico is one, Costa Rica is the other. Panama is definitely an up-and-coming power. I have to give Jamaica now, because they made two consecutive Gold Cup finals in the last two tournaments. So you definitely have to throw them in there right now as an up-and-coming power. We'll see what the Canadians will do now. Obviously, they have that new Canadian Premier League going, even though it's only for Division III players. But still, though, you never know when that really starts growing. That can help and helps out the national team. It's a situation where I think Berhalter is, you know, you can't stick with your tactics for too long. And if you don't change it, then you're going to get found out, and then you're going to get punished, and you don't know what's going to happen after, you know, there's a downfall of goals that's going to go right into your net. You know, with Michael Bradley, Chris, you know, I think you know my argument about Michael Bradley. He has an offensive prowess. He can attack. He can bring the ball up. He's not a six. For sure, Michael Bradley is not a six. But he's playing in that position for a long period of time. He likes to build the play from the back, or at least to bring up the ball from a deep midfield role. And I still believe that's a hindrance, because you need to have someone help the back line. And I'm not saying he's not helping the back line, but what I'm saying is that, as you've already mentioned, he's rushing back slowly to the back line, and he's not able to help them cover, or at least to help them adjust to get ready to play defense and to help out Dak Steffen. This has been a detriment to the national team because of this deep midfield starting position that Michael Bradley continues to play in. With Toronto, you know, he's been playing as a center back. He's been playing, you know, all the way into the back line and playing defense. Now, I don't know if he's gotten out of that, but the truth is that right now you're going to have to find someone else to play that role. His name is Tyler Adams, and when his groin issues are done, he'll be able to get back out there, and he'll be taking over for Michael Bradley because there's no way he's a fullback. But that's already, we've talked about that. Michael Bradley right now does not have the speed to either run back defensively or play that sweeper role effectively like he used to do. Either he moves up in the attack with Pulisic in the attacking midfield, or he just doesn't attack and remains as a defensive player, remains as a sweeper, but he's not a box-to-box midfielder. He just plays as a stay-at-home defensive mid to help the back line. Your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, okay, there's other method to the madness. By the real rarity or infrequency of Bradley marshaling the game speaks volumes, right? How many turnovers did the U.S. men's national team have in the middle of the pitch?
You know what? I don't want to.
Only one.
I don't want to go overkill because I don't want to make a mistake here, because I know there were at least maybe, I would say from what I saw, probably two or three, but you probably had a better view of everything. What was the amount that you saw?
Well, I specifically focused on Bradley only, okay, and it was just one, and that I can recall. And the reason why that number is so low, Daniel, is because they didn't play out of the back from Bradley. They skipped the layer.
Yeah.
So I think that's Berhalter's way of minimizing turnovers in the midfield. Right?
Right.
That's a coaching tactic. Right, is I'm going to play layers, but I'm not playing layers to play direct, because I know I have talented players that can get onto the ball because of the height and the first touch and the holding capability that Zardes doesn't have. I'm doing it, Daniel, because I want to minimize the risk of losing the ball in the middle of the pitch when Lima's further up. Right?
No, absolutely. You have to do that, because then you're leaving him high and dry.
Now, I want to belabor the point about wasted opportunity by Berhalter to change tactics. Have you been watching the U.S. women's national team?
I've been able to watch some of these games. I've DVR'd them just in case. I mean, they've been clinical.
So
they've been pressing.
The first game that they played in this World Cup was so much different tactically than what they played 4 years ago. They not only built from the back, but they pushed up right through the heart of the midfield when they did it. So if there's anybody out there that's watching both the men's national and the women's national team, notice the tactical difference that Jill Ellis has instituted with players that are known for their athletic skill. Because the talk that I've seen has been, can the U.S. women's national team sustain the technical skill and the mental skill they need to win this World Cup as much as they've used their athletic skill in the past? And Jill Ellis is bringing out the best in the women's team in doing that. Now, if you look at the competition that the women's national team played against, Thailand, right?
Right.
That is the same gap that the U.S. men's national team has with Guyana. The difference is the women scored 13 goals and possessed the ball, 75% of the game. These are American players who are highly athletic, but also highly technical and great at decision making. They have a top flight coach that is teaching these things and working these things. By all rights, the U.S. men's national team should have beat Guyana 13-0. If they were a world-class team.
Right.
Instead, they score one goal in the first half, and nearly 55% of the penetration that they had was wasted. Wasted. Actually, is more than that.
Yep.
They had 55% penetration when they had the ball, but they only created one goal. That's
right.
That's horrible. That's absolutely horrible. Food for thought.
Yeah.
The men should have been.
No, I mean, look, if the.
Nil.
Yeah. I mean, if Jill Ellis plays it perfectly, why couldn't Berhalter's men? But
yeah,
unfortunately, yeah,
that's
how the ball bounces sometimes, Chris. Yep.
Yeah,
but that's how the ball bounces sometimes, though. Unfortunately, so now we got some time left here, and United States in their next match in this 2019 CONCACAF Gold Cup. They are going to take on Trinidad and Tobago over in Cleveland at the First Energy Field, which is the home of the NFL's Cleveland Browns. They're going to find a way to go across the I shouldn't say across the country, just a couple of states away to head over to Ohio, to the Great Lakes area, to play TNT in the CONCACAF Gold Cup. As we take a look at the standings right now in Group D, the United States and Panama, they both have 3 points, but Panama defeated Trinidad and Tobago 2-0 in the first match, and the United States gets 2 more goals to make it 4-0, and they are leading Group D with a +4 in the differential. Panama with a +2, Trinidad with a -2, and Guyana with a -4. So Guyana is going to with Panama. United States against Trinidad and Tobago. What does the U.S. need to do against Trinidad and Tobago? This is not truly a revenge match because that's World Cup qualifying where they get eliminated by Trinidad. But still, though, what are you expecting for the U.S. to do in this one against the Soka Warriors, Chris?
Well, a couple of things are going to be different. One, I think probably the pitch is going to be more narrow than it was at TNT. And two, it's also probably not going to be waterlogged. So those two playing conditions will be slightly different, which means the athletic skill of the American players should probably be of more value. That's kind of one thing. I think, too, there will be motivation for some players. In particular, I would have thought Pulisic. I'm not sure Bradley will fit into that. I think he's probably too crusty and old for that type of motivation to be in his system. But I think Pulisic is probably going to work real hard, as is Areola. I think that we're probably going to see 3 or 4 goals for the U.S. men's national team, but I think we're going to see the same style of play against TNT. I don't think Berhalter changes that. I think he's fallen into the same old rut that every head coach has fallen in since Bradley left. Could be like a 60-40 or 55-45 kind of possession game, but I do think TNT is probably going to come out there with a chip on their shoulder, because the U.S. is going to be playing with a chip on their shoulder. Could be a pretty interesting.
There. All right,
Well, I was just going to say it could be a pretty interesting mental game, for sure.
Yes. No, I agree. I think that's the number one thing right there. Mental games are always going to be very interesting, and it all depends on who's got the cooler heads to prevail in a game like this. So, Chris, thank you again for tonight. Can't wait to have you back on Saturday night for postgame after Trinidad Tobago, same place and different time. But let me just say this. It's always fun to have the coach Chris Gluck on these post-match shows involving the United States. This is going to be another fun time.
It's
thank you very much again.
Always fun to join you, Daniel.
And same here. Always fun to have you on. And talk to you on Saturday, Chris. Thank you very much.
Yep. Okay.
All right, bye-bye. For Chris Gluck, the coach Chris Gluck, I'm Daniel Feuerstein. The United States defeating Guyana by a final of 4-0. And all I can say is that it was a good performance. There were some issues in between, but still, though, you had to beat a team like Guyana to start off on the right foot. Join me on Friday night as we'll review USA Sweden in the final group stage match. That's going to be on Thursday afternoon. Be joined by Miss Araceli Villanueva of MLS Female, and then Chris Gluck will join me on Saturday night after USA Trinidad Tobago in the CONCACAF Gold Cup. My name is Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for joining me tonight, and as always, please enjoy your football. Take care, so long, and bye-bye for now.